Hi guys, so I want to talk about Euless. Actually, no, I want to talk about a little bit more than Euless, because I think that that's actually what we need to do now, particularly in light of how things have been going lately. What am I talking about? I'll tell you everything right after this. A brown card guy. Hi guys, so on the weekend I was covering the National Convoy. So this was the anti-Euless expansion. Well, actually it was a bit more than that really, wasn't it? But there was this massive convoy that was incredibly well orchestrated, because it was like in the southeast, there was, I think, four different convoys coming in from different directions into London, converging around the same time onto Marble Arch. And that also was then coordinated with several other convoys that were happening throughout the country in other cities. So an incredible effort, fantastic effort. And just to see the sight and the sounds of those vehicles, it was just brilliant. You know, the car, the vans and the cars were spectacular. People were dressed up as dinosaurs, people were pressing their horns, lots of signs. So it was really, really good. Well done to everybody that was involved, and a particular shout out to convoy leader Keith Steers as well, who, you know, consistently puts together these amazing drives. But one of the things about this event, and there was a crowd, a small crowd of people gathered there to welcome them as well. But when I say small, I do mean small. And I think that, you know, it was a little bit of a shame really that there weren't enough people, A, on the convoy itself, but B, actually there at the venue to welcome these cars and to cheer them on. And, you know, somebody made a really good point. There's like over 82,000 people or so on just one of the Facebook main, one of the main, I mean, there's multiple Facebook groups and Facebook pages now dedicated to the anti-Euless protest stuff, because there's all these regional pages, plus there's an anti 20 miles per hour one, or a war on the motorist one, and there's a convoy page, and that one alone has over 3,000 members on it. But one of the, there's two main ones, and they have also, they've now kind of renamed themselves as not just anti-Euless, but anti-Euless, NTNs, 20 miles per hour limits, and I'll come to this a little bit more, but they've sort of gone into that direction, and one of them has, you know, 82,000 people on it. And then you wonder, it's like, well, where are these 82,000 people? Because they're clearly concerned enough to have joined this group and to be engaging with this group, but where are they, you know? And I know there's lots of people concerned about it, because I've spoken to so many of them. Now, I know that there's other stuff going on. I know that right now it's really, really difficult, because there does seem to be things that, you know, put life into perspective, that are happening in the world, and they're very upsetting. Without wanting to get too much into it, but I can understand that, you know, what we are talking about, particularly in terms of Euless, you know, can feel a little bit like it pales into insignificance when compared to these massive, massive and virtually incomprehensible global events that that are occurring at this time. And of course, that also culminates in protest events that are also happening simultaneously in London whilst we're trying to bring attention to things like Euless. So I can understand that, you know, people will feel, well, we're up against it really, and, you know, we're never going to win that in terms of getting any kind of attention or media coverage or anything like that. Although, having said that, there was, I think, a reporter from The Sun covering this event. So so that's something. So I can understand that, that maybe this is why some of the energy around, the passion I know is still there. The passion, the anger, the frustration, I know that all of those things are still there, and they're as strong now as they ever were during the whole time that we were building up to Euless. But I can think that maybe some of the energy and the motivation has perhaps fizzled out. And I can understand that, because again, for a lot of people, they're thinking, well, you know, it's happened, hasn't it? I mean, we did everything, we did the protests, we did all the discussions, we created all the content, did all the petitions, and nothing happened. The fact is that the London mayor got his way and introduced the Euless expansion on August 29th, just as he planned to do, despite the fact that even, you know, we got, you know, with the things that happened, particularly in the by-elections and stuff, we got people as high as the leader of his party, and in fact, the Prime Minister himself talking about this issue. However, it didn't seem to make any impact on the Euless expansion actually going ahead, sadly. And I guess it's true to say that not much can happen now. not now anyway, not at least until the mayoral elections that will happen in May next year. And I can understand, I can see that from Londoners and those living around London, from their point of view, it's like, well, what is the point of coming out and talking about it or protesting or walking up and down wet, cold streets holding a placard when, you know, nothing can actually happen, you know, nothing can change. But I think that it's important to understand that there's more to it than just ULEZ now. And I think this is what we now need to explore. And like I said, you know, it makes perfect sense that those Facebook groups have changed their names to not just being about ULEZ, but have now expanded their remit, so to speak. And I think also the fact that when you think, you know, I asked Keith this when I said, you know, okay, well, you have convoys happening in other cities, but why? Because ULEZ is a London thing, right? And he said, well, because there's a recognition that ULEZ is coming there. But in addition to ULEZ, there's a lot more going on. And this is what I'm talking about when we're talking about the LTNs and the 20 miles per hour limits, you know, emission-based parking, you know, more stringent enforcement of traffic laws, lots of things like that that are going on. And so you can see that that impacts lot more people than just those people in Londoners that may be feeling aggrieved about the ULEZ happening. If you think about the 20 miles per hour limit, and I was actually driving in Wales recently. I was on a media launch, on a car launch with Mazda, and maybe I'll do a, let me know if you want me to do a video about my experience driving in North Wales. So I'll do that as another video, but so I won't go into it right now. But what we do know is that that introduction of the 20 miles per hour limit in Wales for residential areas has resulted in a petition of over 450,000 people. 450,000 people in Wales, I think it's got, correct me if I'm wrong, a population around 2 million. So that's quite extraordinary. So you have Wales sort of fighting back against the 20 miles per hour limit. You have cities and towns fighting back against the LTNs and the concept of 15-minute cities. Again, 15-minute concept cities, I don't have an issue per se with the idea of a 15-minute city, but I don't feel that you can enforce the idea or the concept or the operation of a 15-minute city on our cities as they exist today, because they're just not viable for that. They haven't been built for that. You know, you need to build cities that operate to that sort of scenario. And then there's other things. I was reading recently about sound cameras. Of course, they've gone up all over London, decibel cameras. They're measuring sound. People getting fined for that. The weird thing about that one is that Joe Public apparently is in favor of that. I mean, I've got to confess, I love a meaty sounding engine. I love the roar of a V8. I love the wail of a V12. You know, I mean, every time I hear something, I'm like, well, what is it? What is it? What car is that? I'm trying to guess what it is. You know, I love the distinctive sound of an Impreza boxer engine, you know. So, you know, I love it. But apparently 58%, I think this is the RAC research, 58% of people said they were in favor of sound cameras. So again, another sort of infringement, I would say, as a car enthusiast, on our right to have cars that sound the way we want them to sound, you know. I'm not talking about going around revving all times of day and night, but just being able to enjoy the noise. And most modern cars, they have a twin level, you know, so you can have the exhaust on or you on loud, or you can have it on normal. You know, when you go out of town, you're like, you want to turn it up and, you know, listen to the engine, right? So I suppose what we're saying is that this whole thing now isn't just about ULEZ. It's not just about Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, anymore. It's not just about Mark Drakeford, who seems to be the target of all those who are riled up by the introduction of the 20 miles per hour limit in Wales. What this is now about is the overall war on the motorists, or war on the cars. I mean, either way, it's the same thing. And this is not a conspiracy, as some people have said it is, you know. But it's an important factor to talk about now, you know. I'll come back to the conspiracy bit in a minute, but if you want to get more people involved in this discussion, to get more people involved in these activities, I think that this conversation does have to be broadened out to the war on the car and the war on the motorists. And the reason for that is very, very simple and very, very basic. And it's the reason why, for example, the Conservative Party put out their plan for drivers, which was quite positive in the reading. And the reason for that, as stated in that actual report, was that 75% of people in the UK have a driving license. And this is, you know, that's 15 million driving licenses. 75% of people, I guess, of driving age, 15 million licenses. There's actually only 40 million vehicles, so there's actually more drivers than there are vehicles, but of course cars are shared and stuff like that. And the reality is that 78% of all journeys are still conducted in a passenger car. You know, so despite everything, 78%, 80% near enough, of all journeys are still done by a passenger or in a passenger car. So it's still very, very important to just about everyone. And the fact is that the whole thing, not just ULEZ, I'm not just talking about ULEZ and low, ultra-low emission zones and CASs and LESs and what have you. I'm talking about the whole concept of the war on the motorist and the war on the car will impact and affect everybody. This is not to say that we should stop talking about ULEZ. I'm not saying that, because that's still a live issue. And like I said, you know, there's still an opportunity to get that rescinded or reversed come May next year. And also, it's still worth talking about it, because the fact is that it's threatening to spread like a pandemic across British cities if we don't vaccinate against it right now. So, you know, we still need to be talking about ULEZ, but we need to also broaden the scope of our discussion to encompass a lot more. I think this is what we need to do. So it's not so much now about aiming, you know, your anger or your passion against people like, you know, Khan or Drakeford or even Starmer. I think doing that is actually just a red herring. That's just, it's too narrow a target. I mean, I think each time that, you know, we talk about Khan or Drakeford or whatever, you could argue that the real perpetrators and instigators of the anti-car movement are just laughing their heads off. Because these particular people that we target or are targeted by protesters, you know, they're little more than, if you like, if I dare say, incompetent puppets, you know. And why do I say that? Because if you just look at the fact of the anti-car measures in London, which has supposedly been designed to improve traffic flow and improve journey times in London, have actually made things worse. And this is evidenced by the fact that just on Monday, so I'm shooting this, so this is what, yesterday actually, or a couple of days ago, I can't remember, but this news story came out about Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, spending another 10 million on funding a scheme to solve a problem that basically those running London have created. So what that is actually about is that, I've mentioned this before about road work. So for example, where I live in Northwest London, the Edgware Road from the Brent Cross flyover, Staples Corner, if you like, up to Edgware, there's just constantly roadworks on it. It's just like they're moving them around. There's just always contraflows and roadworks. And it's just like, and sometimes they're in like the same place after a week or something. And you just go, who is coordinating this? Or is anyone coordinating this? Because it's just unbelievably bad. It's just really, really incompetent. And I've mentioned this before, and also mentioned the fact that, you know, there seem to be cones blocking off roads that aren't actually even being worked on at the time. In fact, so they say, so this £10 million funding that they're talking about to solve the problem that they've created, is they're talking about the fact that there's 160,000 works and interventions, that's in quotes, that's what they call them, works and interventions in London each year. So this 10 million is basically being spent to figure out how to coordinate between these. What? So you mean that there wasn't actually any coordination until now? And for some reason now we have to spend 10 million to coordinate? Why don't you just get AI to do it? I'm sure it would do it. It's much cheaper. You just jump on ChatGPT. That'll probably figure it out for you. But the 10 million is now being spent on figuring out a problem that's been created in a scenario where we were supposed to see improved journey times, lower journey times, and improved traffic flow in London. And in fact, we have a problem. And the reason this came out is because buses are missing their targets, because they're being held up in traffic, despite the fact that they've got bus lanes. But that's what's happening. It's a mess. So the reality is, when you talk about these high-profile figureheads, they may be you know, waging a war on motorists, but I think that they're just figureheads, you know. And I think that, you know, the enemy actually is bigger, and it's international, and it's what we're talking about is a concerted global effort, actually. the resistance might have started on London streets with you, Liz. Maybe, because obviously there are other people that have spoken out about the war on motorists and the war on cars. But the reality is that, you know, with what we're seeing at the moment, we can't afford to let this kind of momentum fizzle out in London because some people think that they've lost the cause. Because if we do that, it will spread. And I don't just mean it will spread in the UK. In fact, it is already spreading around the world, and this is the reality of it. So, and the other thing that we should probably be doing is to, again, like, you know, putting aside, you know, the Khans and the Drakefords and the Starmers or whatever, is starting to try and identify who the real enemy is, if you like, or who the real perpetrator is behind the war on the car and the war on the motorist. One of the things you've got to be wary of, despite the fact that I'm a member of the media myself, I would say that be very wary of it, because there are parts of it that are trying to promote the anti-car narrative, from whether it's on TV or talk radio presenters or certain broadsheets, for example, that that are actively try to debunk this, what they think is the so-called war on the car, war on the motorist, which they actually, they refer to it as a kind of crazed conspiracy theories. That's what they think that they are. And then they provide platforms for lycra lobby activists who reckon that 80-year-old grannies should get on their bicycles and that toddlers should be perched on the back of a flimsy two-wheeler in all weathers and be ridden to daycare. I mean, you know, there's not an anti-cyclist rank, I'm not an anti-cyclist, but when you think about the fact that when you see people on cycles, when you see that little baby seat that's perched on the back, I do go, ooh, I'm not very comfortable with that. You know, I wouldn't be comfortable myself on a bicycle, never mind putting a little kid on the back of it. So, yeah, anyway, so that's a whole different thing. I mean, I know there are parts and there are countries in the world where entire families ride on a motorcycle, but that's also extremely terrifying to see. And it gets worse because, again, sticking with the media, in an effort to discredit anyone wanting to simply exercise their right to, well, their free right to drive or ride in the comfort of their own car, for which they have, of course, obviously very handsomely already paid in terms of costs and fees and taxes. But like I say, in an effort to make those people, or make us rather, look ridiculous, such newspapers, such as I've just mentioned earlier, they will go as far as to actually say, and this is a quote, so I won't say where it's from, but it's a quote, people objecting to traffic restrictions can easily become exposed to much murkier ideas and alarmist conspiracies, often overlapping with anti-Semitic ideas of the New World Order. What? How did anti-Semitic come into automotive? What's that got to do with anything? It's crazy. So you got to look at what these newspapers are saying and why they're saying it and what they're trying to do and how they're trying to pull the rug of credibility out from under our feet. Even though, you know, many of us, myself especially, we try to rely on data and facts and stats and all of this sort of stuff, you know, to make our case. Not conspiracy theories, not fabrications or of ideas. Yes, I am a car guy. I do come from a point of passion and enthusiasm, that's for sure. But I try to do so as objectively as I can. We've got to look at organizations as well. That's the other thing. You've got to keep a lookout of what's going on. There's the obvious one I'll come to in a minute, but there's another one. Like, for example, there's an organization called Possible, and they state on their website, this is a quote from their website, "Our Car-Free Cities campaign aims to help local communities reimagine their own neighborhoods where car dependency is a thing of the past, and to co-design and deliver practical grassroots solutions that reduce motor traffic dominance." That doesn't sound so bad, if I'm being honest. You know, I mean, some urban areas, some congested inner city areas, I'd be like, okay, well, if you can make that work, if you can figure that out, why not? And if people are okay with it. But there's the next part of this. From the outset, we're clear a car-free city is a city which is free of the dangers, pollutions, and emissions caused by mass private car ownership. Basically, that's an attack on your right to own a car. So that's so the so you know the first part they could have had me signing up for that, but the second part I'm like, what? You can't take away my right to own a vehicle. And then I said, like I said, let's look at the most obvious one. The most obvious one, of course, we're talking about Just Stop Oil. Interesting about Just Stop Oil, it's a UK-based environmental activist group, but it's funded by an LA-based organization called the Climate Emergency Fund. And behind that is someone who is benefited their hair or they will benefit from billions that have come from the oil industry. Just let that sink in for a second. The Just Stop Oil is funded by an outfit which was founded and funded by an individual who's personally benefited from oil. Okay. Okay, I'm not going to go into this in detail or who that person is. There's a lot of complexity to that person in question. I don't know them, so I can't, you know, cast any kind of opinions or aspersions on them. I couldn't begin to contemplate the psychological impact of certain traumatic life experiences that might have led to these actions. So I will let you draw your own conclusions. Feel free to Google it and leave your own thoughts in the comments below. I will just say at this point, I am not a climate denier. I'm not, absolutely not. But you know, the reality is that people say to me, "Do you believe in climate change?" I said, "Yes." What do you think? There's like 9 billion of us on the planet, and you know, for a couple of hundred years now, we've been involved in some serious industrial activities. So it's almost inevitable that we've had an impact on the planet. Now, it's not a case of, I don't believe that we'll harm the planet, because the planet was here before us and it'll stay here after us. So it's not, you know, we ain't going to do anything. It's going to shrug us off. But the point is that we are worsening the climatic scenario that we need in which to survive. And of course, we then need to address that because we need to live on this. We've only got this planet until we figured out, you know, Star Trek-like space travel. We haven't got anywhere else to go. We're on this planet. So yes, we've got to figure that out. And we've got to look at the climate. We've got to see what's happening. And we've got to figure out ways of stopping at it. But at the same time, we've got to be proportional and pragmatic in our response to these things. For example, again, going back to the ULEZ thing just for a minute and looking at London. London is cleaner than it has ever been, And it's certainly cleaner than it's been for absolute decades. Now, levels of sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, and other pollutants have fallen dramatically since the 1970s. There has been a staggering 98% drop in sulfur in London. And then broaden that out to the UK, and you realize that, well, the main contributor to climate change is CO2 emissions. The UK contributes 330 million tons annually to global CO2 emissions. The top emitter is actually China at over, and sit down for this one, 10 billion tons. Right, 333 million, that's us, China, 10 billion tons. And that's not just because it's a bigger country or it's a big population, because the population is exactly the same as China, as India, and India is significantly less, although it's in the top three, but it's significantly less than that. So what's going on in China? It's because they keep making tons of stuff that the rest of the world keeps buying. It's as simple as that. Maybe we should look at that situation, the fact that we are causing China to be the biggest polluter on the planet because we are commissioning them to buy the stuff that we want and then we're shipping it back here. So we're shipping all the raw materials to China, they're making it, and then we're shipping it here. How much is that contributing to? And the irony of this is that sometimes we're creating and buying stuff that we think we're doing in order to help the environment. But we're creating and buying stuff. Every time you create and buy stuff, you're actually contributing to the damage. So it's absolutely crazy. It's why I always say, like, the old cars are the best cars for the environment because they've already been made. You know, they're not doing anything more. They've paid their carbon dues, so to speak. So this is something that we should be looking at. Perhaps looking at in the context of what's going on at the moment, not just in one place, in several places, but maybe we should be looking at world peace. Maybe we should be looking at better cooperation between nations and the peoples of the planet. in order to more efficiently and less harmfully share our resources. Maybe that would be a better approach. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that scenario? You probably can if you're a fellow Trekkie like me, because that's what Star Trek, that's the future that Star Trek envisages, but one in which humanity cooperates and shares resources and, you know, doesn't fight over them. You know, and I think that ultimately, you know, a lot of these things can be traced down to that. But if we could learn to do that, I mean, if you just think about having fewer wars, for example, imagine the change that would make, you know, blowing up less ordnance. I mean, just, you know, you've seen all the news footage, I've seen the news footage. Imagine what damage that's, all of that stuff. I mean, apart from the damage it's actually doing to people and to property and stuff like that. But imagine what it's also doing to the environment as well. And then you have a go at me at starting my, you know, classic BMW once in a week. You know, it's, come on. Context, people. Context. Let's put this into context, you know. And then, of course, there's the rebuilding that inevitably happens after any war, which, again, you're making more stuff. And build, the highest emitters, apart from transport in the world, is actually buildings. So, we need to think about these things. So we need to look at the real causes of climate change and emissions. Now, at the moment, if you look at, you know, these climate change or climate activist organizations, it seems that the only solution that they have for us is to just abandon our lives and sit home doing nothing, surviving on recyclable vegetables, and stay hooked on AI-generated deep fake online content. I mean, this seems to be the scenario that they want, which isn't very, it's not very productive, it's not very conducive to humanity's need to function and be part of a society and contribute to that society. So I've got to say that as a content creator, it hurts me to say this next bit, which is actually the opposite of what you would normally be saying at the end of a YouTube video. But the reality is, what I think that we need to take away from this discourse is that you need to stop watching videos. You need to stop just sitting there hitting likes. You need to stop just indignantly commenting on Facebook posts. And you need to get out there. You need to protest. You need to let the world see you and hear you and understand you. You need to continue this momentum, or it will fizzle out and we will all lose. You need to walk, you need to run, you need to drive, you need to find some more gears. You need to hit the NOS and get out there and rev it up. Because if we don't, then ultimately they will win the war on motorists and on the war on cars, and that will impact everyone. Remember, 78% of all journeys, even now. I'd love to hear your comments, I'm sure I will, and I'll see you all in the next video. Brown car
guy. Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can.
And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free. But this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.